It's got 8 arms to hold you. Yeah, it's able to caress and deeply enfold you. Despair is the ever faithful lover, brother, mother, friend. When you admit it, it wants to stay in. Despair coaches sleep. Sleep on through the turmoil. Let you drift away while others toil on. Despair is a cushion so cozy and inviting. You don't see the teeth while they're biting your side. But despair is a thing that if you just take it to the Lord, He's got everything that you need to shake and bring you out. Don't mess with despair alone. Because when you admit it, it doesn't want to come out. But take your despair to the Lord. Lay it down at His throne. Believe me, when you get up, you will no longer groan. Despair.
That was Despair Just Ain't What You Think by Charlotte Sister C. Farrell from the record From Pillows to Pillars here on Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I do think, given, you know, we're recording Wednesday morning, the mere hours after the decision of the U.S. presidential election. And, you know, I think that's a particularly poignant song to be playing in this moment, talking about despair and the need to move beyond the temptation of despair. I know that was, for me, the first instinct upon hearing the news was to sort of turn inward and, you know, almost out of a sense of like self-protection, to shield the empathy that I was feeling for all the people in America and around the world whose lives will be changed and whose lives will become much more difficult because of the results of the presidential election. But that's not useful, right? It might be necessary, if in the moment, to sort of come to some sort of acceptance or sort of deal with the feelings. But you know, that's giving up in a way, right?
Right, and you know, my first, well, I turned off the election results after a while and just watched a movie, a really positive movie somebody had made about Quincy Jones, and I was amazed that he just out 3 days ago, and there's this beautiful story highlighting all of the ways that he went around setbacks, that chose the positive things in his life, and the ways that he had helped so many people, known and unknown, to make their music career. But then about 3:30, somebody called me from Georgia and said, you know, they were crying and said, we lost Georgia. And three or four other people called before 4 o'clock. And at first I thought, I'm just going to call and say, Jesse, I can't come to the station tomorrow and record a show. And I kept somehow going back to the words within the song, despair can you have two options when something bad hits you. You can cry about it, which I've done. I was trying to get a pen from one of the people at the front desk, and I'm like, hey, I was helped by the pen. What? But writing, this book, From Pillows to Pillars, is 6 chapters, and there was a book of poems I wrote after a while healing from a head injury I got on my way back to work when I was a health promotion consultant to the city of Toronto. And someone, I don't even know who the first person was, told me to write some poems. I had a godmother, Virginia Capers, who was an actress, and I watched her go through having a surgery that they said would make it impossible for her to sing again, and she sang again. And just really letting it out, let the crying, let your body say, yes, it's okay to cry. But then immediately thinking, what would help? What would help more? I'm at a station. One of the things I can encourage people to do over the air is talk to each other, hear and feel each other, give each other the grounds to get you some Kleenex, some toilet tissue, both of which people gave me. Not castigate them, but then, okay, so then what are we going to do? Okay, we have a radio station. We can make room for more news to come in. We have a lot of announcements about events, et cetera. But we can make it possible for people to know what's happening in the downtown east side, what's happening in Burnaby, what's happening in other places that we don't hear about. And how can we join each other's meetings? Because I see flyers. Don't you see tons of flyers? The walls out as if you have got more flyers. Attend some other than those for the group you belong to. I intend to go to the ones for the neurodivergent group, which I have a phone call. Even when you cut these devices on, sometimes they find a way. But it's like distractions, reminding people that there are opportunities on the campus, wherever you are, to go to something other than what you go to, and then see how your concerns about humanity or your concerns about health link up with others.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that connecting, that expanding your bubble, meeting other communities, building your own community, and finding links between them is kind of the only path forward, right? I think that the election results show maybe that there's an empathy deficit. Mm-hmm. that we need to do a better job at understanding each other and understanding the way that each other feels, and the situations of each other, and being able to empathize with those and put ourselves in each other's shoes, as opposed to just thinking, well, what's best for me and my wallet, and trying to figure out how we can make things better for everyone together. And I think also, as you've alluded to or outright said, that, you know, art or writing or creative activity is one of the best tools we have, both for processing emotions, grief, anger, whatever, but also for, you know, coming up with creative solutions to problems and coming up with, you know, outside of the box ideas for how we might approach, fixing the world or building a better world for the future. So I want to echo your encouragement to, after you've dried off the tears, or maybe even before you've dried up the tears while they're still flowing, put pen to paper and channel that into something that might be useful or might just be therapeutic.
Therapeutic. I was going to say, our slogan was radio is man's best friend. But listening to the radio, I was surprised at how many people said, I don't listen to the radio. But how do you get this perspective? Definitely the college community radio stations are there, enabling people to listen to more than just your genre. If you only listen to one genre, you get a piece of the pie, but you don't see, there are other people that are dealing with the same topic or that I might talk to. So I've also using a thing that has as part of its name tube, saying that they have ways that they're inducing or encouraging people to get a show so that their music can get played. And they have to do 1,000. So they turn over to musicians, writers, et cetera, the job of making silly dances or setting up, you know, corners of their room. It creates tons of content for them. While I was trying to watch the documentary about 5 times, I had no choice on that, the tube place. I'm sorry. There literally are people calling me from different parts of the U.S. and even Canada, this just in mourning and fear. But there is something greater that's in the center of individuals than all of the things that the people write to try and distract you. Distraction is a way of decreasing or eliminating people's power. So I would say listen to shows, even if it's just one show different than the one you usually listen to, because it's a free way of getting so much education on what people believe, what they're trying to do, ways that you can unite without people. You know, when you click on those QR codes, a lot of information goes to whoever sent it to you. But by listening to the radio, we didn't ask you for to click any QR codes, but to listen, because there are other communities, there are other people that have beliefs, efforts, etc., like yours, and it can help make it possible. Because with the budget we have, we can't put out, we put out stories, we give stories, we give interviews, but we can't reach the full population. But with your ears and that device like mine that is trying to announce it's near the time of my show, you have the opportunity to just get to know one or two other communities and make the connection to see, oh, we believe in and we want the same things for our children, our cousins, our grandmothers, our grandparents. And I think that's one of the ways that shaking off despair is to know that there is something you can do, and radio is one of the things that helps you to do it.
Yeah, definitely. And expanding, like I said, expanding your bubble and expanding your experience is a great way to foster empathy and a great way to understand the world. I also think, you know, I, like, personally have also been in a bubble in that, you know, the way the election turned out didn't really feel like a realistic possibility to me until fairly late in the game. And I had a couple friends who were certain that it was going that Trump was going to win. And I sort of, you know, shrugged that off as pessimism. But I think that one of the things that this election has revealed to me is just how little I understand, like, quote, the other side.
Right.
That there are a whole bunch of people out there who feel who are dissatisfied with the way things currently are, and they may blame all sorts of different reasons for that, or they might blame certain people for that. And to me, that their perspective seems hard to understand, and so I maybe don't give it I don't think that it is as widespread as it is, because it doesn't make any sense to me.
Right.
But
right.
But that's not that's those aren't the rules of the game anymore. Right?
Right. And I had that same thing that some people who were saying weeks ago, oh, no, she's going to lose. People aren't ready for a woman president. People aren't ready for a black woman president. But I thought, you know, they don't teach government in the same way that they used to. But when I was little, you know, we would say we hold these truths to be self-evident, above them a life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I mean, that's in my head without even having to look at a note. But it's not widely told. I think that when people profess that they're going to free themselves, free other people who've been convicted by courts, they don't understand what a violation it is around these truths that we hold to be self-evident. So parents or people, students who are choosing courses, it would really be good to take courses that help you understand what are the fundamentals of democracy, and then what does a person who wants to live in a democratic society or be a neighbor to a democratic society, what are the things you have to personally invest in? Is it a bigger TV, or is it sometimes going to a community meeting or going to an open house and just listening and feeling, you know, how can we work together around this ideal that we have?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it also comes down to education in a way, right? As you're saying, you know, civics aren't necessarily taught the same way as they are. And even beyond, you know, what specifically children are being educated, like what specifically is in the curriculum or how specifically we as adults are educating ourselves, I think, the main thing is to be investigating and learning and discovering a wide variety of you know, subjects and perspectives and all of this, you know, it's the variety and understanding difference, and understanding the ways that people see the world and how those, you know, conflict or work together and all that. I think that makes it easier to have discussions about shared values or have discussions about, you know, what the direction for a country might be. Whereas, you know, if you're only ever consuming one source, right, or you're only ever consuming one perspective, that's all you see as possible, as opposed to seeing the wider variety of possibilities and what those might mean.
All right, so that's one of the things that, one of the main ways that I've gotten perspectives of other communities is through listening to different shows on CJSF. There are things, just with music, if you only always listen to your favorite style of music, there are so many other ways that you might find that people have bought a message that coincides with your values or your dreams. And just to let that happen, because otherwise there's this you, they, and those people. So I'm grateful. I started with grateful for the station, grateful for the people who donated, but I'm grateful for the people that are administrators, staff people, who with a very, very small staff manage. How many different shows are there?
Oh, gosh. Lots. dozens, we'll say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and I'm, you know, I'm grateful for all of the volunteer programmers who take time out of their day and week to produce their show for no compensation other than the satisfaction of doing the show and connecting with listeners and the audience. I'm grateful for that audience because, you know, without you out there listening, we're kind of just talking,
right,
talking to no one for nothing. So I'm really happy to have you out there. I also want to extend my gratitude specifically to the donors for this show during last week's fund drive. We had Kari made a donation, as did Penny, and Cynthia also made a donation to support the station, to support this show specifically and to support the station as a whole. So thanks to all three of you for your contributions.
And I thank you for your contribution of training me. You know, the station, you know, you can go and take a college program on producing a show or just tiny bits of what's involved in the overall training program here and have a student loan of several thousand dollars. But I am just grateful for not only they're having a volunteer program, but the accommodation. I need accommodation with the size of the print that's on the monitor and with setting up electronic things. All of these little sliders used to scare me, but with the patience of the training team, I don't operate them, but I have a concept of what they do. And I'm just thankful that with respect to I think last week I said as they rearranged the office, there was a new student union built. And some places, you go in and your walker or wheelchair can't pass the desk or fit up to the desk. And they made sure in laying out their space that people who use a walker or wheelchairs or have other things they need, that they can make a path and, you know, travel around. So I am, you'll hear me on Friday, and, you know, you can send comments to me. I don't have a CGSF station, I mean, email address yet, but since I am Sister C, you can email me at iamsistac@gmail.com. And we will continue to see you in the neighborhoods at events and see you here in the building when some of you come to be interviewed, and just feel you in our hearts.
The thanks for putting the show together today, Charlotte. I know it's a heavy morning, but I think you've done a great job at, you know, helping us sort of navigate this together and think about the mind state, the state of mind we should keep forward as we go forward. You've encouraged, you know, contemplation and gratitude and hope, and you've also encouraged writing. You've encouraged creative creation. So I think it might be nice to close with another one of Neil's poems.
Absolutely.
This one is particularly poignant for the subject at hand in terms of channeling that creative inspiration and overcoming whatever roadblocks might be in the way. This one is called "How Dare You Write Poetry." Can you hear him? I can. He's the voice in my head that said, "How dare you write poetry?" It was clear and distinct. "How dare you write poetry?" the voice continued. "Stop! Stop! This is not good for you." Interesting, I thought, as I sat down to write this poem. Whose voice is that? It sounds stern, like a man's voice. But whether father's voice or mother's voice, it simply doesn't matter. They both reside inside my head. Wanting to tell me where the unsafe boundaries begin, boundaries that pretend, if followed, will keep me safe. How effective are those boundary voices then? That is fallacy, because it's not true. No matter how safe we play it, in the end, we all die. Maybe the purpose of the voices, as primitive as they are, is to keep the monkey alive long enough so it can procreate. The goddess of procreation is the owner of the voice heard inside the inner sanctum of my mind. For a million, million years, that voice has urged us to survive. Follow the rules and live. Here, God said as she splatters sticky, gooey protoplasm across the cooling earth, go forth and multiply and see what you can make of that. That edict has been driving every species to procreate ever since. This is the paramount edict of existence that drives all species. Keep surviving and evolving through reproduction. Parents become parents who become parents who become parents. Changing microbially in accord with conditions, until perhaps one day we can say to God, Mother, this is what we made of it. Every species exists because of voices from the primitive mind, instructions that strive to ensure continuation of the seed. Variations of these rules have been passed down century after century, but boundaries deter our need to grow. So why is it not safe to write poetry? Because it is not safe to stand out among the crowd. They might see my imperfections. For a hyper-narcissistic introvert like me, standing naked and unashamed before the world is the most life-threatening thing there is to do. But there is another voice, a more urgent voice, a louder voice that says expand, grow, defy the rules, defy the boundaries, and express the voice. Express the voice from the other side that demands to speak its truth. Share the knowledge that it is time to move from animal-based rules of greed, lust, and desire for more time to move to a life of awareness. Awareness that comes from the heart, supported by our emotions. Awareness that allows us to see just how difficult it is to exist as a spiritual being living in an animal body. With that voice that tells me the rules to be safe. How dare I write poetry? I do because I must. and that voice is mine.
Likewise, I do because I must. Well.
Yeah, it's important to engage and to work with what you're feeling and to transform it into something that can help you, or that can help someone else. And once again, thanks for putting this episode together. And I think since I was the last one to read a poetry, I think maybe I can tell the listeners that, you know, we'll see you again next week at 10. But it's always love time, poem time.
Love time, poem time. Thank you so much, Jesse.
Love time, poem time. Love time. Shine. Love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time, time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time, time for poems, poets and singers. To untie all life's ringers. Poem time, love time, time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace, rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words, place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time, love time, poem time, times for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time, time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time, times for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time, time for poems, poets, singers, time to untie all life's ringers. Time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace, rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words, place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time, love time, poem time, poem time, love time, love time.
This is Bird Note. Every year, hundreds of bird species migrate between North and South America. But what came first, northbound migration or southbound migration? Biologists believe this bright orange Baltimore oriole descended from a South American ancestor that began migrating north in search of new breeding habitats. This supports the southern home hypothesis, that most birds originated in a southern territory and then evolved to migrate north. But there's a northern home hypothesis too. The family tree of warblers in the Western Hemisphere shows that most of these songbirds likely originated in North America, then evolved to extend their winter range by migrating south. Many birds have likely gained and lost the ability to migrate multiple times in either direction over the course of their evolutionary history. And it's still happening today. Barn swallows normally breed across North America before spending their winters in the tropics. But recently, a small group of these acrobatic birds began staying in Argentina year-round. Researchers suspect that, given enough time, they could eventually become a genetically distinct subspecies of their own. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Diverse, independent, yours. You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, British Columbia.